step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
We're at a final hour on this Wednesday afternoon. Chris Mason, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's a leading Kubota dealer. C. Mace now joins us. He's in the booth with Willie for the coverage as I'm sitting here watching Bally Sports Southeast with the Braves and the Mets. It'll be Bally Sports South tomorrow night. 8 o'clock, their coverage will begin, getting ready for game two in Denver. And C. Mace now joins us. Chris, did you see the crazy finish in the Rangers, the Rangers Penguins game, where Pittsburgh was down to their third goalie, Louis Domingue, and he got the win in game one.
I did see that. I also think the goal that the Rangers scored was not goaltender interference, but that's just my opinion on it.
Ooh,
so I think the Rangers.
Okay.
Was interesting.
I watched that over and over again, and I go back to the one that they called a goaltender interference on Luke Cunningham when he completely missed. I can't remember who the guy was. Do you remember who that was, Willie?
When he was pushed into the goalie, it was Middleton was the defenseman.
It was Middleton,
so it was
yeah.
the goalie for the
yeah,
Wild.
It was anyway,
so it was Fleury, right?
Yeah.
That was overturned, but I thought that Dumoulin pushed Kako into the goalie, but that's neither here nor there. I mean, that was a heck of a game. And, you know, what a seesaw. The Rangers came out really well, and Pittsburgh pushed back, and, you know, you're up to your third goalie, and Louis Domingue gets a big win for his team. And it's been a crazy playoff so far. I don't know what to think. Florida loses, and it's nuts.
I think we're back to the craziness that is goaltender interference again, because I've seen a lot of people commenting on that, by the way, saying the same thing. Like, we clearly talked about it the next day a lot after that Minnesota game, and I see a lot of people talking about it from last night's game, and it's like we're back to like square one, I feel like. Like, what is goaltender interference?
I know.
Here we are.
I don't know. There's no way he could have got out of the way, and he definitely got pushed. So I don't know. It's a tough one, man. The consistency in that one, and I know every situation's different, but, you know, has to be certain standards and, you know, points of emphasis that have to be consistent. And the contact, if it influences the player to go in, well, that is goaltender interference. If a guy's going down and he gets touched and he's already going to go into the goalie, well, that's, in my opinion, it's not goaltender interference. But what do I know?
I want to know from you, because you've been in the spot before, and I don't know if you really know the answer, but you've been in this spot and you understand the situation when he came in. It's 5-0. I'm trying to figure out, you know, should Connor Ingram be really, really praised for his play for the 2+ periods, or was it just Colorado was in control and they just kind of took their foot off the gas and, you know, kind of coasted to the finish line? How should we observe what Connor Ingram did whenever Riddick got pulled?
Well, I think you observe and, you know, praise based on he was told to go in there and he did his job. He went in there and played well, regardless of how the Avs played it. That's completely out of his control. You know, if you're Connor Ingram, you're going in there and you want to play solid. You want to go in there and you want to do your job. And I really felt that he did that. The test will be if he starts, which I expect him to. You know, nothing's for certain, and obviously I don't know for sure, but if I'm a betting man, I think he's going to start, and then we'll be able to get, you know, analyze the situation properly, because I guarantee at the start of the hockey game, the Avs, that's one of my keys to the game, is they're going to try to end this in the first 10 minutes again. They're going to try to put the Predators away like they did last time, and he'll be expected to make saves of that situation when, you know, when it's the puck drops and it's 0-0, and you have to make those saves at that time. But to analyze his performance last game, he went in there and he did everything, you know, he could to save face and to keep that game from, you know, being 10-0. And I thought the guys did a lot better job in front of him as well. I thought he made some really good saves, and I mean, he had 30 shots. He played well. You know, he did what he had to do. He looked calm. The moment wasn't too big for him. I feel that it was to his benefit to get in there the way he did. I know there's a lot of mental, anxiety leading up to a game. You know, you're starting. He didn't have to deal with that. He could just go in there and play. But I thought he was awesome.
Well, thank you. You took me right where I was going next, because I agree with you. Heck, I said it last night in postgame. I'm like, you know, nobody's going to ask me. And I'm certainly not in the decision-making, but I'm sure Connor Ingram's probably going to get an opportunity to start game two. So now, with that being said, you're sitting there free and easy. There's no pressure. And you're coming in a tough spot. It's already 5-0. Now the pressure, hey, you're our starter game two. We need to even up this series and head back home. How do you approach that? Because now it's a completely different mindset for Ingram.
Well, he got in there. And the biggest thing is, you know, you don't know or truly believe you can do something until you do it. And I think that was a lot of the guys. I think yesterday in a situation that was, you know, you're playing the Colorado Avalanche, you just saw a different team than you saw last week. And you now know the magnitude and the energy and what playoffs is compared to the regular season. You've got that under your belt, because until you do it, you don't really know what that's like. I've been through that, and people will tell you, you know, the playoffs, it's just different. It's just everything is, you know, bigger, and the energy and the pressure. And until you experience that, you know, Phil Thomas, you know, there's a lot of guys that have really never been in that situation. I don't even think last year, you know, the guys getting experience with all the COVID and the way things were, and the building couldn't be full capacity. It wasn't quite the same this year. It's back to full tilt, and you could see that. And I think the first 10 minutes, even the veterans included, I think it was they weren't ready for what was coming. And, you know, now that I think Ingram got in there and some of these guys got that game under their belt, to me, there's no excuses not to be ready for the storm that the Avalanche are going to bring at the start of this game, because I guarantee they're going to come out the same way, and they're going to try to put them away. But I expect the Preds to be better. I think they did eventually settle in, and, you know, contrary to what Twitter says, I think there is a lot of valuable lessons that you can take out of that game. You know what? Sometimes the best thing that can happen to a person is to get your butt kicked, because you have a lot to learn from that. And I think the Predators, you know, they have the right mindset. The right things are being said. They owned the situation. You know, they knew they weren't ready. They thought they were, but they weren't. Going into game two now, there's no excuses. They have to be ready, or the same thing could happen.
Chris Mason is with us. And, Mace, along those lines, how does the process work with the staff? And, you know, I'm thinking of Ben Vanderklok, the goaltender coach, to try to put the pieces back together with David Rittich, because you've got a young goalie in Connor Ingram who you hope will give you a good effort, but there's really not another goalie to turn to. It's not like, hey, well, if Jimmy doesn't do it, we'll go to Johnny. Johnny doesn't do it, we'll just go on to Darren and then on to Elijah. You know, it's those two guys, really, for this series, unless they can get Saros back somehow, which we don't know if that's on the horizon, but it's certainly, there's no indication at this point that he's coming back anytime soon. We hope he is, because that would be great. But if they have to turn to Rittich again, how do you, behind the scenes, go back through last night and try to get him back in the right mindset to where maybe he gets back into the series and has a chance?
Well, I think you have to, you know, really lean on his experience. And I think any goaltender, any player to get to that level, you know, has had those kinds of games and, you know, stunk out the joint and had a poor performance and got pulled out of a game or got sat on the bench. And I think what separates the elite athletes and players that make it to the NHL is their ability to process that and to kind of flush it and, you know, reset your focus. And your mindset is everything to be able to, you know, focus on the task at hand, which would be the next time you're going to get in the game and be ready to perform and not dwell and really carry that, you know, what happened in game one. And I think, you know, he's an older guy. He's not a younger goaltender. He's been around the block. He's been in these situations. been a starter. He's been a backup. He's got thrown into the fire, you know, dozens and hundreds of times in his throughout his career. And to be able to get here, you have to learn how to deal with those situations. And I feel that, you know, you're going to have to obviously have some conversations and maybe, you know, just a gentle reminder of that exact thing that, hey, it's done. You know, the guys said it last night. We said on the broadcast, at the end of the day, if you're able to, you know, truly believe that it doesn't matter if you get blown out of the water and you lose 10-1 or you lose in triple overtime, you know, like the Rangers did, it's only one win. It's they won the first game. Game two, you know, if you do need Riddick in the series at some point, or if he does, you know, if he does somehow start the next game, you have to expect him to be able to put that behind him and move forward and perform, you know, at his best. So that's just something I think as a professional that you're expected to do, even though, it, you know, he was obviously visually upset after that. I think he was breaking a stick down the hall. And, you know, it's a tough start to a series when it was a great opportunity, I think, for him. But combination of, you know, him and the way the team came out, I don't see it going much, much better either way, no matter who was in the net.
We talked a lot last night about this. Dan Hynote gave a great interview to Lindsay Rowley last night during the second intermission. You know, they were way, way behind, but he was saying, look, we've got to keep putting the deposits in with the physicality and the way we want to play and hope that we can grind and wear them down some over the course of the series. Mace, we talked about this a lot on the broadcast, but share with people who maybe didn't see it how you thought the Predators did in that category and how the Avalanche stood up to it.
I thought they did exactly that. And that's why when people say, oh, there's nothing, there's no value out of that game, it was terrible, it was embarrassing. Yeah, the score, the end result, obviously that's not what you don't want to see in the first game when there's so much anticipation. And I don't care if the Avalanche were taking it easy, you know, the rest of the game. That's on them. But it gave the Preds an opportunity to start hitting their players, to start playing in their end. They got a couple goals. They put some doubt into Kemper. They, you know, they made the Avalanche have to engage in that physical battle and the scrums after the game, even if they're just trying to play it out and get to game two. I thought the ability to do that in that game, if they had just coasted the rest of the way and the Predators had said, you know what, well, it's just, this game's over. We're going to get to game two. We'll just try to, you know, stay healthy and start over, you know, on Thursday. They wouldn't have done themselves justice. But the fact that they were able to get into those situations, they started to turn the complexion of that game. And in their minds, in the Predators' minds, I think it showed it to them, hey, if we can get to this early, we have a chance. This is the way that we have to beat the Colorado Avalanche. They know they weren't going full tilt. They've been in those situations. But it doesn't matter. You know, you had a bunch of guys, Byram and, you know, even Girard and guys like that getting involved. Manson got in there. He's probably the only really big threat physically that I would think. Landeskog, you know, you're taking them out of their element. They do not want to play that game. They'll do it because it's playoffs. But the investment part of it is, can they do it if the Preds, you know, can extend this series and get it to be a long series? Can the Avalanche do that for seven games? I don't know. Game one and two, they're at home. They're jacked up. You know, they have the Stanley Cup on their mind. They want to put the Preds away as quickly as possible. But can the Avalanche play that style for seven games if the Preds can find a way? And if the Preds can sneak one out tomorrow, we'll never talk about game one again because you're going back to Smashville and you're tied 1-1. So to me, this game tomorrow is absolutely massive. And if they can get to that type of game, and keep making those investments and get the Avs, you know, to play that style of hockey, I think they have a chance. But we'll see. That's easier said than done.
Mace, good stuff. We'll talk to you a little bit later, and we'll get ready for round two.
Okay. Awesome, guys. Have a great day.
All right. Chris Mace joining us from Bally Sports. Game two tomorrow night, and all of the games are on Bally Sports, television-wise. And, of course, you can always hear them here on 102.5 The Game. When we come back, we'll talk more about game one, Predators Avalanche, and looking ahead to game two here on 102.5 The Game.
There's a new way to hear us on Nashville's best sports talk. 106.3 from downtown Nashville to Spring Hill on I-65 to Murfreesboro on I-24. You can now have a new choice. Great sports programming. You can hear the Preds, all of our programming on 106.3. Save it as a preset. I'll check it out tomorrow when we are out on 840, Simmons Bank Open. Looking forward to that tomorrow. Willie, we've got a little bit of controversy brewing here on several fronts. Okay?
Okay.
Let's start with congratulating Paul Klocek. I believe that's how you say it, Paul Klocek. Took a lot of guesses, as you know. We rifled through a lot of calls. And Paul correctly said 266 was the 06-07 season. He didn't have to say that, but 266 was the answer we were looking for. Most goals scored in franchise history in a season. This year they scored 262. So congratulations to Paul. You earned that. We'll see you in the building Saturday afternoon, Game 3, Preds and Avs. Now, this is where the controversy comes in. Kyle has been very adamant on tweeting us and on our text line. He says, man, I Googled this sucker. He's even got a picture. I see it. And it says the record for in a season for goals is 272. But guess where he got this information? Wiki. Oh, Wiki. And guess where I got the answer? From the team's website. So, Kyle, I ask you, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I don't know. Maybe we need to have an investigation.
Already did. I conducted my own investigation.
Did you? Oh, okay.
I looked at every single Nashville Predators hockey reference page in their existence, and the most they've scored in a season was indeed 266.
Oh, so Kyle, never trust Wiki. Well, not don't never. That's incorrect. You can trust it sometimes, but Wiki's not always right. Kyle, you got duped by Wiki. Hmm. That's why people were guessing 272. They wikied it, and they got duped. 266 was the correct answer, not 272. Can you go in? Have you ever edited Wikipedia? I haven't. I've never done that.
I have not.
Can anybody just go in and do that?
I don't know.
Should we change that? Because that's incorrect.
Most times.
266.
If a user does,
I don't know where that went wrong.
Needed.
I you know, sometimes, yeah, I don't know how that could happen. It's interesting. I was about to get worried because I saw that, and I know on our broadcast on the last day of the season as they got close and looked like, you know, maybe they could, you know, in the last few games, I should say, we put that up there.
Oh, okay. Well, I got it from the team website, so I felt like I was good. I felt like I was good with that info.
Yeah. No, we put 266, so I was like, wait a minute.
Okay.
The guy had me second-guessing myself.
So, Kyle, I appreciate, you know, you've sent your proof of why you were guessing 272, but I can tell you is Wikipedia is wrong. Now, the other one that we need to get down to is – we played the interview at the end of the show yesterday, you and Philip Forsberg. Of course, that was the interview you used on your coverage on Bally Sports last night. And we have not discussed this, but you have said this in a group text. Are you being serious or are you joking?
No, I'm not joking.
Philip Forsberg.
I think you listen to the tape.
Okay, well, we've got the evidence. So let's – I didn't catch that yesterday, but it was at the end of the show.
I think I heard what I heard. But we'll,
okay,
let's see.
Well, let's investigate. Elijah, roll the tape.
Thank you, Willie.
Oh, say it again.
Thank you, Willie.
What, Phil?
Thank you, Willie.
So you think he possibly said Billy?
Well, I think with the Swedish accent, it sounds a little bit like Billy.
Hmm.
It was, you know, he really speaks well, as we know. But there might have been a little Swedish spin to that. Let's hear it one more time.
Thank you, Willie.
I think he
said
Willie. Not
the full-on Billy. It's not a full-on Billy.
Are you saying his mustache might have ruffled some of the
ruffled,
audio there?
A little ruffle a little bit. Yeah, there could have been a ruffle.
Do you think Forsberg listens to the show?
No. Well, I don't know. Maybe he does.
Is it crazy to think that he listens to the show? I don't think
Thank
it's
you,
crazy.
Really. No, it's not crazy. Our station is readily available.
Thank you, Willie.
I think he said Willie, but, you know, I think it would be great if he did say Willie.
It's a little ruffle.
Did anybody say something to you about that, or did you?
No. Okay. I just thought of that because
you
guys have been giving me.
Outstanding if people thought he said Willie. I think he's saying Willie.
But man, I think he's saying Willie in a Swedish accent, which sounds a little
like
closer Willy. To Willie. Yeah.
Okay.
Willie.
The fact that you brought that up in the text, I told Elijah, I was like, is Willie being serious? I don't know if he's joking or he's like, no, I think he's being serious. And I was like, oh, we need to investigate. I did not catch this yesterday. Of course, D-Mace was still hot and bothered with some stuff that went on in the press conference, so we may have been a bit distracted. I think he's saying Willie.
Okay.
But it would be great if
I'll
he said
that.
Willie. The better story is Willie. I'm just saying.
Yeah, let's right, not let facts.
That's right. Let's not do
that.
We have
a good story.
All right, let's come back and discuss game two, because there was some good stuff in there with C-Mace that we need to get into, because this team is going to have to respond in a big way. And you just heard it. Hey, they're going to come out and try to punch you in the mouth and end it quick, just like they did Tuesday night. So we'll get into that. C-Mace, good stuff from him. Of course, that segment every week is brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. So we'll discuss game two on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thank you, Coach Stock. Don't forget, The Game is Nashville's official home of NASCAR. Vroom, vroom. Sunday, 1:30. Goodyear 400 at Darlington Raceway. Also, Chasing Checkers will get you ready for that race starting Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. NASCAR on 102.5 The Game, presented by Nashville Super Speedway and Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway. Back here on the DDC, our show is presented by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, a York-certified comfort expert company. Scheduled now at springhillac.com. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. Game 2 tomorrow night, 8:30, puck drop. Pete Weber and Hal Gill will have your call from Ball Arena here on these airwaves. I'll have pregame for you at 7:30. Willie, C-Mace, and their crew of Bally Sports will have their coverage starting at 8 o'clock on the television side of things. So how do the Predators counter Colorado's barrage? Because I agree with C-Mace. They're going to try to deliver the Mike Tyson knockout punch in the beginning of the game. Again, I mean, it's a little lofty to think you're going to do it in the first 2 minutes or 3 minutes of the game like you did Tuesday night, but they're going to certainly try. How do the Preds counter?
I think it is an interesting reference you say with Mike Tyson, or because it was such a quick thing. I kept thinking of the word blitz last night. It kept coming to my mind. They were getting blitzed, right? And they weren't protecting themselves, and they couldn't hold off the blitz. And I do think that same thing is coming tomorrow night. But like with Mike Tyson, if you can withstand the early barrage and get the game deep and hang in there, I think it can be a much, much different story tomorrow. It starts with good goaltending. They didn't get it last night. And that, look, it's no knock at David Rittich. You saw, I don't know if you saw it, Darren, because I don't think the TV could pick it up. He was sort of down the tunnel, but he was so upset when he went down the tunnel. I mean, he smashed his stick and he did all that stuff. He was frustrated. He's a good guy. He wanted to do well. He didn't have a good game. And
it was his first career postseason start.
Yeah, Adam Vingan put out the expected goals for, which I think can be a little deceiving. I just thought he was caught up, Rittich was, in the speed. So much was coming at him so fast. I don't think he was able to settle in and bail him out. I mean, that was a kind of deal where only a great goalie could bail you out and settle you in. So he would need some help there. Connor Ringer might need some help tomorrow. But you also have to do your part as a goalie. The goalie can be a game changer. And so it's a combination. They've got to contain that speed better, and they're going to have to get a couple of saves. And if it doesn't come in the first 10 minutes, it's going to come at some point in the game. Colorado is just that good. Mm-hmm. They won 32 out of 41 games at home. That's a huge, huge number. They can destroy teams. We saw them on national TV do that over and over to several different teams. So it takes a great effort. But if you can get through, I think they can write a different story. I was looking at the lines, Darren, because this will be interesting. I don't think you're going to mess with the first line or the Colton Sissons line. But that being said, I think they need more sustained attack. Forsberg, Granlund, and Duchesne had elite numbers together during the regular season. You know, they are a legit elite first line. But I think Colorado has got to be looking at themselves last night and saying, we did a good job. We contained that trio. They didn't get a lot of time in our end. We forced them to defend. And so they won that battle there. You'd really like to see something better and more dominating from that trio. And then let's look at the Sissons line. Once again, you know, they delivered a lot of hits. Colton Sissons in particular, I thought played pretty well. I mean, he was smashing people. But they didn't win a lot of faceoffs. They were chasing a lot. You know, hits are one good thing, but it also means you don't have the puck.
Yep.
Right? You can't get a hit when you have the puck. You're hitting when you don't have the puck. So they were chasing. They were defending. So their numbers were not good analytically at all last night. Got to be better. And they're a group that when they're on, they deliver the hits, but they deliver them in the context of also playing a good, sound game and holding the opposition off the board. So they need to be better. And then
they need to be more visible. I mean, yeah. Yes, hits are part of it and they're visible, but I mean, quite honestly, like Tanner Jeannot has been so impactful for so much of the season, and he's just not visible enough. You know, he just looks different out there. I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's the back to the rookie hitting the wall, but there's just got to be more. I mean, he's had such a productive rookie season, but in the last 3 weeks, I mean, he's basically gone off the grid. In my mind, he's just not the way he looked for most of the season.
Very true. And I think in the least effective, according to the analytics, was Johansson, Cunning, Tomasino. And we've had plenty of conversations about the second line all season long. And so is there an adjustment on that group? I mean, they didn't have the puck much, right, when you get down to it. They only had one shot attempt. They weren't getting into the offensive zone at all. This is valuable experience for Tomasino to get this opportunity. But, you know, for them to get back in this series and be competitive, they've got to have more from all four lines, of course. You know, nobody is excused last night. It's not like you could say, hey, the Predators got beat 7-2, but so-and-so and so-and-so had great games. Nope.
Everybody gets blamed. Yeah, everybody gets blamed.
Duchesne had two nice goals. Don't get me wrong. That was excellent. But overall, I think everybody's going to look at themselves in the mirror and say, I've got to do better.
Yeah. I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, look, I'm not blaming one. I think this is everybody gets blamed for this one. When you lose 7-2 and you get dominated in a game, everybody shoulders the blame. But, I mean, going back to what you said about Luke Cunningham. I mean, this is not about trying to, you know, tear down or somebody, whatever. Stats are stats. The proof is in the work. It's there. It's on the sheet, as they say.
And nobody's more aware of it than they are.
Luke Cunningham has been invisible for half of a season. So I don't understand why he is in the top six. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, forget how you feel about him. If you're in the top six, you have to produce. And he hasn't produced in half of a season. How do you still earn top 6 minutes?
Yeah.
Well, if you haven't produced in half of a season.
They've tried different people. That's the thing. And nobody's been able to really take the bull by the horns and do it. And in the off season, I think that's what you're going to hear a lot. It's, you know, number one is to get Philip Forsberg back into the fray. That's the first priority. And then after that, I think the search is for another guy that can give you a top six guy, you know, not a 35 or 40 goal scorer, but there's got to be somebody who can give you more consistency there. And maybe next season is totally different for Luke Cunningham, but because I do think he's a solid player who has shown much, much better than what than how he's played this year, especially, like you said, in the second half. He had a slow start in the first 8 or 10 games, then came on, and I thought he was having a Luke Kunin year, and then sort of hit the wall after the All-Star break. He just hasn't done much since then, and it's been a revolving door on the wingers with Ryan Johansson. And to Johansson's credit, his offensive numbers have still come through.
Yes.
You know, he's gotten a lot of 4-on-4 goals. Obviously, on the power play, he's been excellent, and he has done his best.
Good job with the face-offs.
You know, because he hasn't gotten to play as much. Remember, they did put him for a while with Forsberg and Duchesne, but they felt it was better to balance it with Granlund on the first line.
He was the best in the face-off circle last night. He won some critical draws. In fact, that power play goal, he won the draw there in the offensive zone. That's what started all that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm encouraged. You know, the power play looks like it's going to be, you know, it's going to be productive. If they can keep getting opportunities on the power play, I think they can do it. Although, I thought the Avalanche, what they showed last night, they're going to be really aggressive against the power play of the Predators. They really did a pretty good job early in the game of not letting them set up. But once they did get it set up, I think the looks are there. So they've got to adjust there. And, you know, I think that'll be there. It's the 5-on-5 sustained offense that they need more time with the puck. They've got to grind. They've got to get more shots. They've got to get a little bit more possession. I don't think they're going to outshoot Colorado, especially on the road. In that building, nobody does. You're going to get outshot, but you've got to do better than you did last night there. You got to contain them better.
I'll say what I've been saying for a good while now. And I know John Hines. Every time I get asked, whether it's on Robbie and Rex Road or by anybody else, do you think he'll do it? And my answer is no. But I've been saying this for a good while. Like, okay, I know you're reluctant to move. Then put Janot up there and just see what he can do. See if it changes.
But you
anything.
Just got done saying it. Janot has been ineffective.
Well, okay. Then maybe move him. Move him somewhere else and see if that changes anything.
Look,
like, this is not working. It's stale right now. It's stale. Third line is stale. Yep. So move it around. Like, here's your chance to say, okay, they've been quiet for a while. Let's move him up to the second line and let's see if maybe that gives him a little bit of a jolt. I mean, I've been saying it for a month, and there's been this huge reluctance. It happens for like one game and then it goes back. Well, now the well's been dry. Like it's maybe it's time now to move him around. I mean, see if he can get a spark up there with Johansson on the second line. I don't believe he's going to do it, but I'm just throwing it out there. If you're ever going to do it, now's the time. Why don't you just see? Third line isn't doing what it's been doing most of the season. So how about mixing it up? You're not afraid to mix up lines. How about mix up that line? Just see if it changes anything. Look, in the end, Willie, I don't know if any of this is going to be enough because Colorado's just that good. And Connor Ingram, if he does indeed start tomorrow, is going to have to be just outstanding. He is. He's just going to have to be outstanding because if you don't get outstanding play, you just really don't have – in between the pipes, like you just really don't have a chance against Colorado. And, you know, David Rettich, you can break down those goals. I mean – I don't look at the power play goal. I don't really hang that on him. The shorty was a horrible turnover in front. That's not on him. But the other three, yeah, I mean those you got to get those stops. I think the one went off was it the Makar goal? Did that go off his helmet or his shoulder? I couldn't. It looked like it bounced off his helmet.
Side of it. It looked like off the side of the helmet. Which it's a dynamic move by Makar. There's a lot happening there. Remember at the beginning of the play, Landeskog blew up Carrier, who I think, you know, this is a great learning experience for Carrier. Yep. Knocked his stick out of his hand. It was like a bad dream. He kept looking up, trying to grab his stick, looking down, and then he's like, oh, my gosh, he's coming. And then Bakar blew by Tanner Janot. Carrier couldn't get back in the play because he didn't have his stick in time. And so he makes a great move. But, I mean, I don't think that's a soft goal. It's just one that, you know, you'd love to have your goalie bail you out there, all things considered, and it didn't happen.
I don't think Tanner Janot did him any favors either. I mean, he kind of got juked on that play by Makar.
Yeah, he absolutely.
Makar kind of gave him a fake to the right and just drove it down Makar, the left side, right down the gut.
And if you've watched Cale Makar, this is what he does.
Yep.
He's hard to contain. I didn't have as much a problem with that one. as I, you know, I think you just somewhere along the course of five goals, you know, can you have it be 2-0 instead of 5-0 somewhere in there, right? Or even 3-0 instead of 5-0 where you got a chance to work your way back. In this day and age, you can come back from 3-0 down, or at least 2-0 down. Maybe you get one and it's 3-1 at the end of the first period instead of 3-0. You know what I mean? But 5-0 is just game, set, match right there.
Yep. All right. We'll come back, wrap up Wednesday's edition of the DDC. But first, you've got a word about Lee Company.
All right. Lee Company, we've got the saga that continues with game two tomorrow. Lee Company has been a big sponsor of Nashville Predators hockey throughout this process, and they will continue to be. We've got more coverage coming up tomorrow with Pete, Hal, Darren, the whole gang, and Lee Company is a part of it. Also, when you come to Smashville on Saturday afternoon, it's always a great spectacle. The NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, Lee Company will have their display all around Bridgestone Arena. And with all of the weather that we've been having, a lot of rain, it's warm one day, it still gets cool sometimes. Lee Company has your house running properly if you're on the home maintenance plan. 615-567-1000 or leecompany.com. That's 615-567-1000 or leecompany.com. Ask about their home maintenance plan where you pay that really small monthly fee, but in exchange for that, you get the annual checkups of your air conditioning, your heating, your plumbing, your electric. And when you need repairs, you'll get discounts if you're part of the plan. That's what we do at our house. It's worked really well for us. 615-567-1000. For Lee Company.
Greg on our text line says, I could see Ryan Johansson calling Willie Villy before Forsberg. Yeah, I wouldn't put anything past Johansson, so I would agree with that. I endorse that message. But I still think Forsberg was saying Willie.
Yeah, but it's kind of like when you say, like when we say Patrick Hornquist, you know, it's harder for us to say the Quist.
Yes.
You know?
Uh-huh.
It's just like for Swedish people, like sometimes people say Hornquist, like Q-U, where it almost sounds like a W sound, where mm-hmm. if somebody in Sweden, it's Hornquist, you know. So I think there's a little bit of the opposite going here. I think Philip was making every effort to say Willie. He knows my name, but there's a little Swedish, as Elijah called it, a ruffle. A Willy. A Willy.
Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Let's go down to the Barrow, Barrett.
The Barrow.
The Barrow.
Billy, Wiley, Willie, whatever they're calling you. Willie, I've been listening to you for better part of 16-plus years, and I have count on one hand how many times I could see the veins popping out of your neck like you were earlier defending Ryan Tannehill. And you couldn't be more dead wrong, dude, and here's why. They paid that man $35 million to face down the likes of T.J. Watt and all these big brutes and coming to violently crush him. And you're telling me that some chump like Jared Stillman being aggressive is unfair? I mean, this guy shirked his responsibility for 3 months. He's been hiding, spending all those millions. And I don't see how you can defend them. Oh, they were aggressive. Oh, that's unfair. It's just unfair. Derek Mason yesterday had the exact opposite reaction as a player. He said he wanted the cups. You could tell he was just about to let fly with an FCC violation because he was that riled by it, in a complete opposite reaction that you've had. Having had some time to think about it, have you rethought that, or are you still defending this guy?
Well, I let me clarify what I said. I had no problem with the question or the tone of the entire press conference. My point was, when you have a 17-minute and 19-second press conference, if you expect a guy to be dead letter perfect with everything he says, I mean, more power to you. I just don't think we should hold somebody to that standard. I think if he could do it over again, would he choose those words and saying, I don't think it's my job to mentor? Maybe he'd rethink it and say it over again. But he poured his heart out. He got grilled, as he knew he was going to, and he's a professional. And I just think it's unfair to hold him to the one statement after 17 minutes of answering questions, and this was late in the press conference, on a question that was phrased this is a guy that's ultimately trying to take your job. He gave a very bland answer, I thought, that didn't have a tone of, I'm going to try to keep this kid down. I'm going to make his life miserable. There's nothing like that. But I think when you saw it, and this is where it all started for me, I saw the text in Twitter. I saw it in print. And I thought one thing. But then when I listened to the whole context of the entire press conference, I just think it's unfair that it's been blown so far out of proportion, that one sentence.
Well, fair enough. I appreciate you addressing it, man. I hope you gentlemen have a good day.
I can't wait to talk to D-Mace about it. I understand where he's coming from, but I just think when the time comes and the two actually interact, I think Ryan Tannehill is going to be a professional with Malik Willis. He texted Malik Willis right after the draft, and he said that during the press conference. I think they'll have a good relationship.
Yep. I also saw Kurt Warner's tweet today. They've been showing on SportsCenter and NFL Network on, I hate when players say this. Young quarterbacks, if you want advice, you can DM me anytime you want. And that's the whole point. I mean, that's what I knew was coming the minute he said that.
And he said he would do that. And Ryan Tannehill did say in that answer he would do that. But if you're just looking at the sentence and making a judgment, I would go, again, go watch the entire press conference and see what you think.
Well, we played it, so I listened to it yesterday.
I know. I'm just saying, I don't know if Kurt Warner watched the whole thing or just saw the print, saw the quote, and just went from there.
Mm-hmm. That will do it for our show today. Game 2 tomorrow night. Looking forward to see what the response will be by the Predators. Same start as Tuesday night. Willie, good stuff. I don't know if we'll talk to you tomorrow or not, but we'll have lots to talk about on Friday for sure.
We
Ian
will.
Ayer will join us tomorrow at 10:30. Looking forward to that discussion. Elliot Friedman at 1 o'clock. Some things on tap for tomorrow's show. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. Continue to be safe. We want you back with us Thursday morning at 10 o'clock. We'll see you then.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.